Now, back to your tech report.
A couple of weeks back, I happened to attend the NAB convention in Las Vegas. That stands for the National Association of Broadcasters. One of the companies I had an opportunity to sit down with is Backlight Creative. Mike Green is their CEO, and he tells us what the company's all about as we talk all about Backlight and their family of companies. Tell me about Backlight. What do you guys do?
Terrific question.
I know.
So Backlight is a collection of fast-growing SaaS products for the media, entertainment, and video-heavy industries all across the video value chain. So script to screen, things like, you know, starting sort of at the beginning of it,
yeah.
Software for scripting and storyboarding and call sheets and budgeting and pre-production software. And that came from a company we acquired called Celtix. We've got software for production tracking and workflow management, and that's from a business that we acquired called F-Track, which is now again a product line inside of Backlight. There's software for media management across cloud and collaboration and, you know, review and approval and file sharing, and that's a solution called Iconic.
Okay.
And then inside of that's a division of Backlight called Backlight Creative.
Okay.
And on the other side, there's something called Backlight Streaming, which is solutions for live broadcasting sports and reflecting those streams into various social destinations, or making AI-driven highlight packages and other streaming activities like making OTT apps and fast channels. And those come from product lines Wild Mocha and Zype, which again are two other companies that Backlight has acquired. So Backlight is a collection of SaaS businesses across the value chain that we've acquired and have, you know, formed this new brand, Backlight.
Your background is what?
My background is, for a lot of my career, on that content side of things,
Okay. Making
things like OTT apps and so forth. But I actually have been on the kind of services provider side for a while, a lot of them in OTT and streaming, and helping customers kind of do what I used to do, which was build OTT apps. And then I joined our CEO of Backlight, Ben Kaplan, as he was getting this thesis going and as the initial acquisitions were starting to happen to form what we then announced to the market as Backlight last spring.
Do you find that the majority of the market is embracing this new generation of production? Because this is, to some of the older folks in the business, you know, old blood, it's hard to get people to do things differently.
Yeah.
It's a very new way of doing things.
Well, you know, I think a lot of folks are just looking around at the macro trends and realizing why all the solutions that we've now acquired to become Backlight make sense and what the value prop is of each of them along the sort of, like I say, video value chain. Because there are kind of some, like I say, market trends in terms of the democratization of content creation, which enables more cloud production, the move towards more remote work, which was accelerated by the pandemic, which needs for more remote collaboration and software tools to facilitate that. And also, the more on the streaming side, the growth in complexity in terms of endpoints and how you have to reach consumers. And managing that is kind of the focus of Backlight Streaming. So these are sort of macro trends that are pain points for our customers at the biggest media entertainment companies. And while we don't expect any of these given buyers inside of these major companies to need or use at least each one of our solutions, we kind of plug into their workflows and meet them where they are and accelerate, and as we say, dramatically improve each step of the video content creation lifecycle.
How many years have you been in the business?
Backlight sort of got started.
So you personally?
Oh, me personally?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, let's see. I would say, I mean, we're on a microphone here, so we're
Yes. Talking
about before.
I'm
we
not
got
asking
on
how old you are. I'm just no, asking. No. I just want to know how many, because I want to figure. I want to talk about the way the industry is now.
So the answer is roughly 25 years.
Okay. So you and I have been in this business very, very, very long time. What led you down this road? Because you've been down the road designing apps and building apps in the OTT space.
Yeah.
Before you've been working at this company, right?
So what's so interesting to me about that question is that, like, when I first, we were talking about radio as we were just before we hopped on the mic, and I worked for WBCN in Boston.
Yep.
And we had these amazing artists coming into the studio, like Ben Harper and, you know, I'm trying to think of who was of that era, right? You know, the Mighty Mighty Bosstones, Give Me Your Boston, whatever. We would, obviously, they would do great interviews, they would perform live on air, and then what did we do with those assets after the fact?
Yeah.
We were just starting to figure out how to take those recordings and put them up on the website and let folks,
if you had a website at that point,
right?
Did you have a website at that point?
Were they using like Real Player or WinApp
or
whatever? But I was trying to drive that strategy, and I don't know if that was sort of, apologies, legal at the time, like those rights, like there's no language around that, really.
There wasn't really, I mean, at that point, that's what the whole copyright, you know, generation happened, I guess, in the 2000s when music started getting rights.
Yeah.
I mean, an interesting story that you're telling, because I was in the radio business when I first started. We were recording interviews on Reel to Reel. and I was cutting tape between breaks and playing things back during a morning show,
yeah.
and I was the one who said, why don't we put a computer in this room here so we can record it, because I'm doing this stuff at home that you guys can't do here. Mm. And it kind of, similar paths, different directions, I stayed in the audio side, you stayed in the video side, really kind of almost had to force people to realize that this is a path that's coming.
Yeah.
And I felt that it was a bit interesting to try and convince people, but I did, and it seems that you have a similar situation.
Well, my path was far from linear, but I mean, in my current world with respect to media asset management, you know, we have this solution I mentioned called Iconic. One of their most important customers is Spotify, and Spotify uses their media asset management to manage the intake of all of these podcasts that are coming from all their podcasting partners, which then get up onto the Spotify platform, which is, you know, if we had had that back in WBCN days, that would have been amazing. But, you know,
yeah,
we've
exactly.
obviously made things a lot easier and faster and more secure with greater visibility, with greater flexibility for how people want to work.
Your company, obviously, you work more with broadcasters and those kind of partners, right?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, across Backlight, yes. I mean, we're here at the NAB, and if you look at who uses Wild Mocha, it's the biggest sports broadcasters, you can see them on their website. But with something like Iconic, which is very much leaning into the democratization of content creation
yeah.
and management, you know, the major holding companies all have agencies who use Iconic for some reason or another. Smaller agencies than that can quickly spin up teams of 4 or 8 people and start managing and sharing and doing reviews and approval using Iconic. I mean, Celtics, you know, again, at the earliest part of our the content lifecycle, is used by millions of screenwriters. So we all kind of are leaning in as Backlight into the media entertainment and content creation and distribution ecosystem/workflow. But and broadcasters are certainly one of the most important constituents
yeah.
in that mix. But they're not exclusively, you know, where we play. The last thing I would say about that quickly is if you look at Iconic releases this analysis of all the media that's in their kind of registered system over the course of a year. And while video is like 90-something percent from a size perspective, the number of assets actually is heavily also PDFs and text and photos and images, right, and audio.
And
right?
Does that come back just to, I guess, the review cycle and the budgeting side and everything else that goes along with it?
I guess our customers can use it for whatever they need to in their yeah. workflows. I mean, in a lot of cases, certainly with things like OTT, you have the actual, you know, 2-hour movie file, but you have
yeah.
a trailer, which is short. You've got imagery for the marketing materials. That stuff lives in Iconic. It also gets used by Zype. If you're going to assemble an OTT experience, which is what Zype helps customers do, you need to have the right thumbnails for the movies that are in the OTT service and all that sort of stuff. And so we've been focused on connectivity between our various solutions to enable people to, you know, store all their archive and a lot of this stuff in Iconic and manage the kind of post-production, who can touch what, but also how that connects to the people who are making OTT apps or making fast channels or other things that our customers need to do.
How do you gauge what the customer needs and what to work and what to focus on?
That's a great question. Usually they come to us with some sort of opportunity that they're trying to take advantage of or problem that they're trying to solve. And, you know, we, I think, are decent at doing discovery with, like, hey, we can see you have this type of content and you have maybe an OTT presence, and have you considered fast channels, free ad supported television, an acronym that I'm sure most people know, but in case not, right? But
now you do.
Making a full linear channel that goes to like a Samsung TV Plus instead yeah. of what you would have given to, you know, your broadcast channels that or cable networks that go to Comcast or something.
Mm-hmm. Industry-wise, I mean, with this shift to streaming, I mean, it seems like it happened so fast, but it didn't happen fast. It happened kind of over time. Where is it going next? You know, and we'll get to AI in a second because mm-hmm. that's a big question that I got it for you. But, you know, people are consuming where they want, how they want, and we have, as consumers, have way more control. Mm-hmm. But do we?
Well, I think it's, you know, we if we have enough money, I guess we do as consumers have yeah. control, because we can just go around and assemble an array of a la carte services to watch pretty much whatever we want to watch, but it's not necessarily a great user experience. So there's a lot of discussion, of course, about the bundling and unbundling, and when you see a content provider like WWE say, you know what, we're not doing our own OTT network anymore, our own, you know, we were just giving our content to, licensing it to Peacock,
yeah.
let them be the mega aggregator. You know, there's a seesaw in a lot of these businesses about, you know, control of the end customer relationship or not, or how broad should you be versus how specialized, and whether there's better ROI with each of those approaches. Like, we're inclined to work with whatever strategy the content owners have in their minds.
So that being said, you also alluded to the fact that, customers use your solutions in different ways. Everybody uses it in a different way.
Yeah.
Is there any particular solution or in a way that someone's used it that surprised you? Or you've been like, oh, that's an interesting approach. I never really thought of that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's such a different answer by sort of product line, because each product line deals with a different part of the video value chain. But in like Zype's world, let's say, you've got customers who can monetize their content by making an AVOD service, ad-supported video on demand service, a subscription service, a TVOD or transactional video on demand service, a live version. They could just make fast channels, they could just do short form. Like, there's so many ways, and you know, smart companies have a good sense of the value of their content in any of those contexts and can do a mix of models. So I'm not really surprised oftentimes. What's interesting for me though is in something like F-Track, which is on the creative side of the house, which has software for production tracking and workflow management, it's not just VFX studios with complex pipelines, you know, assembling content for a Marvel movie who use this stuff. It's, you know, product companies, like enterprises who make like sealants. We found a company who makes sealants who have all this video content about how you properly use those materials. And they had to know step by step who's doing what in the video sort of assembly pipeline. They want the same visibility and security, I guess, as some of the major studios.
Yeah, that's a good point. Never really even thought about that. Talk AI for a second, because we talk about things that are going a little bit too fast than I think we can all handle. It's been, what, we're now May? Or April? We're April, so we're what? It's been 4 months since everybody in the world has heard about ChatGPT, and suddenly all anybody is hearing about AI. This has been going on for longer than just what people have been hearing with ChatGPT-wise. Where do you see AI fitting into this kind of workspace and this workflow for your customers?
Yeah, well, I'd say all of our customers in some form are, you know, experimenting or thinking about how AI can help them. A lot of times if you're a, you know, you recognize the power of video as a communication medium and you want to kind of upscale your ability to participate in delivering messages with video, then you're interested in this generative AI approach to video. And can it be good enough? And maybe it's a combination, of course, of human editorial excellence and, you know, bringing more video to bear at scale with AI. Each of our sort of product lines has their own way that they think about delivering what the customers need with AI. So in the case of Wild Mocha, again, that just, I know for your listeners, I've named a bunch of products, but it's they help with live sports broadcasts. And we use AI to rezone those, meaning identify that, oh, this is about to be consumed on a cell phone. We're going to turn what's a 16:9 wide into a vertical video, and we're going to use AI to reframe that it stays focused on the speaker's head even as they move around, or the ball as the ball moves around a soccer field. We're going to use AI to generate highlights packages as soon as the soccer match ends of all the red cards given, all the goals scored, all that sort of stuff. That's AI-driven use cases. With Iconic, there's a lot of AI from a partner ecosystem to enrich metadata to understand object recognition, what was in this video, or speech to text, or any of these other models. So there's kind of some example like that in each of the areas and where we play.
Yeah, no, I could see that just in just asset management, trying to just tag things with the right tags to make sure you could find stuff down the road. Script writing, I mean, an incredible use case.
We've seen experimentation there. I mean, people saying, hey, write me a script that's a romantic comedy about two women sharing an apartment in New York and one of them, you know, X, Y, or Z. And, you know, I think that the artists in our community, because we care about the creators, are still saying, hey, you know what, like, there's not a lot of heart in that. I'm not losing my job because of that yet. But I think there's a lot of experimentation out there, and you know, there's a lot of ethical issues that we've, of course, been talking about, and how those models are trained on other people's IP and all that stuff. So I think it's early days, but I'm excited to see the curiosity both within our company and in our customer base.
What excites you at NAB, National Association of Broadcasters, convention that happens, I mean, a couple years off, we're virtual. Yeah. What excites you about being here amongst the people? What are people excited about when they come to your booth?
Well, on a personal level, what I'm excited about is that some of these conversations that can be, you know, piecemeal over Zoom seem to accelerate and become so much more of a higher signal-to-noise ratio in person, which I really appreciate. It's a great chance to say thank you, both to partners and customers, but even to my colleagues who are from all over the world who've come together here. Yeah. And that's a great opportunity. So that may be actually, I didn't plan on giving this answer, but that's kind of the what I'm most excited about at our booth, is seeing all these amazing faces around us right now who've come from France, from Sweden, from Australia, and have a real passion for serving our customers.
That is Mike Green, the CEO of Backlight Creative from NAB, just a couple of weeks back. This is your Tech Report.
There's more Your Tech Report after this.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Hi, I'm Mercedes Nickel, 4-time Winter Olympian and host of Dropping In, a podcast with Mercedes. This is a podcast where I interview a bunch of different people. I get the good, the bad, and the ugly, as well as I share my stories along the way. Now you can drop in at droppingin.com or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. I'll see you soon.